Call the March 19th Common Council meeting to order. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Alderman Dambier.
Here.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Garber.
Here.
Alderman Nelson.
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise and join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on the agenda is item B1. This is suspended period. Again, we have a tradition here of 3 minutes per speaker, so get to your point quickly. Is there anyone wishing to speak? Please rise and come forward. Give us your name and address and 3 minutes. Ms. Erickson, good evening.
Yes, Jill Erickson, 8016 South 60th Street. I'm here regarding item G3 on the agenda. Council actions requested from the Quarry Monitoring Committee. Number one, I want to see these happen. One of those actions is a new survey of the north-south boundary along 51st Street, east-west boundary along Drexel Avenue. We have to establish legitimate boundaries now so that the future excavating that's happening and getting closer to our subdivisions to the south of Drexel aren't violating PDDs 23 and 24. And we need a current one because a 2016 survey, that's page 61 of your part one packet, Stantec third party indicated that the wall of the quarry showed excavation beyond the allowed boundary as much as 8.39 feet in some sections of area A, labeled A. Were the repercussions? No. How did the quarry respond? One, well, that would be Vulcan's fault. We bought it. Vulcan did it. Doesn't seem like a really good answer. Second answer was, well, there's been a lot of erosion, which just seems a little odd to me. 8 feet of erosion, and yet we've got to use explosives to blast the quarry wall. So not buying that one. And as far as the second thing we have on that action sheet, requesting the revisiting of PDDs 23 and 24 regarding the blasting limits. Again, the quarry is getting closer and closer. I'd like to see the city attorney look at those PDDs, set a date for the city attorney to look at them so that it doesn't take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years while we keep coming back asking for that. And if you're not sure, items G7, 9, and 10 on tonight's agenda all have to do with ordinances to amend an ordinance. It can be done. It's not impossible. And then finally, just in case numbers help you, our subdivision, Root River Heights, just our subdivision, pays the city over $1 million in taxes. And that doesn't include all those other subdivisions along 51st Street. In contrast, you might be surprised to learn that the quarry paid less than a quarter of that last year. In other words, about $211,000. We as residents deserve to be heard. We spend, we want to protect our properties, and please act, vote to act on these things. We're tired of 4-hour quarry monitoring committee meetings. Yeah, the last one was 4 hours. Thank you, Alderman Nelson, again, for showing up for one of those. They're painful. Let's do something. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Debbie Ulrich, 7388 Triton Court, Franklin. I wrote this down so I wouldn't forget because I do have a few points. As spring is nearing, many migratory animals, hint, hint, are making their way back to the northern breeding habitats, such as the area of Whitnall Park. These breeding habitats are crucial for the long-term survival of these species. Species like sandhill cranes come back at the exact same time every year and return to the exact same place every year to mate and raise their young. We have observed 5 families for 4 years in the same location continuously. We must be responsible stewards of the land to protect such species as these to ultimately preserve the long-term health of our ecosystem. In addition, many non-migratory species call these areas home and would be directly impacted by the destruction of the habitat at Ballpark Commons, which I realize the 1,000 trees have already been taken down. But bald eagles, countless species of owls, wetland species such as egrets and herons, woodland species such as deer and fox all live in these areas and would face many threats having to move. Finally, being able to see these animals up close and in a natural, safe environment is one of the benefits of having these species around to provide us to look at them. So many people choose to live here in a rural city to be able to have this opportunity to get outside and enjoy wildlife and nature. To destroy a precious ecosystem such as this is to take away value from the city and negatively impact those that live here. Additionally, I would like to read something that was addressed to my father many years ago, and after I read it, I'll express why.
Hi, Ms. Ulrich. 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of people in my family, and I'm going to use their time if that's okay.
It's not, but...
Resolution of congratulations and thanks to Alderman David R. Mayer for 25 years of service to the community. Whereas the Mayer family settled in the village of St. Martin's in the town of Franklin more than 100 years ago. Whereas R.A. Mayer, David R. Mayer's father, answered the call to serve his community by being elected as town supervisor in 1934 and being reelected for 7 successive terms until he retired from office in 1948. Whereas
Ms. Teresa, Ulrich,
yep.
Your 3 minutes are up. And Mr. Mayer was a good friend of mine.
I know.
And he was an honored citizen, and we all know that. So please, as I said earlier, get to your point, and you only have 3 minutes, so now you've extended
your time. Well, okay, because it says the Mayer family is to the city of Franklin as the great redwoods are to the state of California, in that both have roots that extend deeply into the soil and have seen history developing, with the exception that the Mayer family has partaken in development of the great city of Franklin and has helped to make it a better place to live. And my grandmother raised and lowered the flag for 18 years. And just one more thing. On the Common Council, my father always tried to take care of his fellow citizens and his man. And then it said, be it further resolved that the Lord Almighty be kind to David R. Mayer and thank him for giving his service. So my point to that is, please, let's make decisions that are going to be good for everyone.
Thank you, Ms. Ulrich.
Okay, just one more thing, please.
I can't.
Well, can I come back up again and speak for my husband then?
After everybody else has spoken.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm not being rude, I just...
I understand, but I'll come back. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak? Ms. Gage, good evening.
Thank you.
You usually come pretty close to three. Sometimes three.
We'll see how this goes tonight. Okay. Dana Gint, 9011 West Hawthorne Lane, Franklin, Wisconsin. Of course, I have questions regarding the Ballpark Commons. I see that it's an agenda item this evening. Does that mean that as constituents, we can ask questions and have answers if it's on an agenda item?
We're not prepared to do that.
Okay, I didn't know.
It's an update from them to tell us what's going on.
I just wanted clarification.
Sure.
I want to know when the feasibility study and legal review will be available to the public, and when will you be voting on anything related to the funding for Ballpark Commons? On page 4 of the development agreement, it reads, the developer shall arrange for all costs of each phase of the project in excess of the funds provided by its construction lender and city. On Exhibit A1 includes 4 apartment buildings that were to be under construction by now. The current development agreement requires the developer to pay all cost overruns. Why would the originally executed development agreement not be followed as negotiated? This agreement was executed barely a year ago, and now it is being presented that there are substantial cost overruns should give everyone in this community a concern. What happens in the event that Ballpark Commons experiences another major cost overrun? How can the city approve a new municipal subsidy for Ballpark Commons associated with apartments when a subsidy for those apartments was already included in the original agreement? Will that subsidy already paid to the stadium developer be clawed back in part to be made available to the new apartment developer? Why should Franklin citizens ever believe elected officials again if those officials don't follow the current agreement originally negotiated for public funding for Ballpark Commons, including the total amount of public funding being disclosed? What does the proposed developer's sale of land south of Rawson mean for the city's ability to enforce other provisions of the current development agreement? Shouldn't any asset sale proceeds be deposited into the TID until those other obligations of the developer are fulfilled? Since this project is funded using public monies, there should be a thorough audit of all the spending to date, including all change orders associated with this project. It is not standard procedure for well-managed development projects to have dozens of change orders. This is an indication of substantial management and planning issues. This comes back to the issue I raised in January's Common Council meeting. There should have been a guaranteed maximum price contract created between the developer and the general contractor. This would address any errors or mistakes in the engineering or planning of this project. According to page 4 of development agreement, the Ballpark Commons developer agrees to create at least $20 million of new assessed value by the year end of 2018. The actual assessed value added was barely over $2 million. I have the document in case you want to see it. Also noted on this statement was a property tax exemption request by the developer for the stadium of nearly $4 million. My question is, why is the stadium even considered part of the value of this TID when you are including a stadium in the project totals of the financial feasibility when it is actually tax exempt? Why would the city provide the developer with a property tax exemption for this stadium? Is it simply because the city or county does not want to enforce a tax lien on a landfill? The development The development agreement states on page 5, the city shall disperse a maximum amount of $22,521,484. This included all phases of the Ballpark Commons project, including the apartments. Now I hear that the Mandel Group is going to request additional public funding. But it was clear that the apartments were already funded as part of the nearly $23 million that has been spent, which has been well described throughout numerous documents. I would like to publicly request copies of the plans and specifications for each phase of the project that is stated on page 2 of the development agreement, that such plans would be retained at the offices of the City Economic Development Department. There are endless red flags regarding this project, the 39 major amendments to the PDD, and other substantial and material changes.
Okay. 4 minutes.
Is there anyone that would give me their time?
You can have my time.
We don't do that.
You're going to do that? Okay. There are endless red flags regarding this project. Okay, let's go to this. The transparency and lack of accountability regarding the city and this developer is overwhelming. A month ago, I pointed out that there are plans hanging on the wall in City Hall that are not valid, which I verified with the county, and yet they still hang there. On June 19, 2018 meeting, I asked during public comment if I could read two letters that people requested I read into the meetings.
I'm really sorry, but I demanded that Ms. Ulrich.
Okay, well, I can finish it at the end then if there's one time.
Yes.
I don't want to be rude, but please don't put me in a position to be rude.
First of all, these letters that are mentioned that I'm talking about were from June 19, 2018. They were not part of the file. They're not listed on the website. And you stated, I even have the video, the audio of it, if you want me to play. It said you would be including it on the file. They were not included on the file. I even spoke with Sandy, emailed Sandy today, and she added a couple of the letters today, but they weren't even the ones that I asked to be requested that I read into the minutes, and you said no, you had them. So I had those letters.
I understand what you're saying. and respectfully...
And Krista wasn't even here. She doesn't even know that there was a letter from the Milwaukee River Advocates that was submitted to the council.
Being in the record, it's part of the official record. The website is not official record of the city.
There's many common council...
And Mrs. Wesolowski told you that.
There's many common council meetings that have numerous letters from citizens attached to them.
And
it's pretty clear that that's what they asked.
They are attached to the record, Mrs. Kim.
But they're
attached to the record.
They're also attached online. There's many citizen letters that are attached online.
I'm not arguing with you. We'll take care of that.
Okay.
So, thank you. Please, thank you. Mr. Bolton, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Leroy. Right at the
end. Yeah, you get
to it's too much trouble.
Wow.
I don't think I hear myself. It don't work too well.
It's on.
Okay. Kirk Bolton, 8035 West Imperial Drive, Franklin, Wisconsin. Long before the ballpark comments was approved by the city, I was coming before the Common Council and giving my opinions
on... Can you talk a little louder? If you hold it a little closer, it'll be...
It's closer. Okay, thank you. I'm TID projects that aren't industrial parks. And my comment then and my comment now is that I don't think that's a good use for the city to get involved in. TID should be industrial parks because they provide jobs for all sorts of people, not just people with, you know, professional degrees or secretaries. The ballpark comments does have some problems. I think the big issue right now seems to be that there isn't enough development there to cover the tax payments, which are going to go to cover the expenses of the city borrowing to put in the infrastructure. I don't really worry too much about whether the buildings are built or not. What bothers me is whether the incremental tax payments are going to be made to the city on time and in the amount, you know, needed to pay off the debt so that the city does not incur any additional costs. I don't know if that's going to happen. And I think that creates a few problems from a number of perspectives. Number one, it shows the developer that the city will do anything necessary to try and help this guy out. I don't think that's right. It sends a message to other developers that, oh yeah, the city is not going to follow through on the contracts necessarily, on the contracts that they sign. And it sends a message to the people too. The people have to pay their taxes on time in the amount required, or there are penalties. So I don't know how the Common Council plans to address this issue, but if he doesn't have the development there, he still needs to pay. I don't know how you can do that and say it's going to be fair for everybody else if he does not pay the required incremental taxes on time and in the amount necessary.
Thank you.
One other issue I have, I've been thinking a little bit about how the Common Council does operate. I think it is reasonable for the mayor to pick the people who work underneath them. But I also think that it might be a better idea to let the Common Council pick people that are on the commissions and committees that the city has. And I think the important reason there is that everything that comes to the Common Council is not under the control of the mayor if that would happen. So I would hope you might take that into consideration. Thank you.
Anyone else? Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Lynn Callis, 8054 South 55th Street. First of all, I'm prompted to ask this question. When people ask questions here, how do they receive an answer? Do they have to come back to another meeting, or?
Typically, we don't answer those questions.
Okay. So the purpose of asking questions here is?
The purpose of this segment is for you to let us know what you think.
Okay.
As opposed to asking questions.
Okay.
Go ahead, ma'am.
There are aldermen who will answer your questions as well. You have direct access. Each citizen has access to their aldermen if you'd like to go that route.
And that is correct.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
So I'm part of the quarry issue, and I'm curious if it has been or could it be done that we would rewrite our standards as far as the air blast decibel limit And do we know what that was on the one day in question? Because it seems to me that it was an air blast issue. So I know that it's 123 decibels is what the limit is, and it's, you know, I was wondering if we could increase that in our contract. And then I'm kind of baffled by the center line issue of measuring the boundaries, and I'm curious, why in the world isn't it just their property? Why isn't their property the boundary? Like saying, you know, my yard goes out to the middle of 55th Street or something like that. So that's a question I would like asked. And then if we could possibly renegotiate any of these limits to the blasting, couldn't there be a fine for overages and have, you know, like this other man was mentioning, a fine if you don't pay or don't follow the rules? Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else?
I'd like to.
Anybody else? Yes, me. I'll provide you 3 minutes, please.
Judy Mills, 8018 West Winston Way. I didn't realize that what I wanted to say was going to piggyback on so many other citizens. I wanted to make a suggestion that instead of this call being called citizens' comments, that it be called taxpayers' comments and questions. And I think that my second point was going to be that taxpayers, when they ask questions, deserve answers. And as long as I have come to these meetings, everybody sits up there quiet. People ask questions like, why? And no one gets an answer for anything they ask. And I think that you're the mayor and you're the common council. Somebody on this dais must have answers for the questions that are being asked. If you don't, you should be able to find that out and say, I'll have an answer for that question at the next common council meeting. No one ever gets an answer for anything. I mean, I've never heard an answer, except your 3 minutes are up, get out of here. Then I also think that that citizens should be able, I think this should be changed. First of all, I think that three-minute rule should be changed. When Dana was talking, there were people that said, we would like to hear what else she had to say. And you said, get her out.
Let me remind you that you have 3 minutes.
Yes, I know.
Recapping the story
said he would give her his 3 minutes, you don't do business that way.
We don't.
Well, consider changing that. If people really want to hear what another taxpayer wants to say, and somebody is going to give them that 3 minutes, and no one in the audience objects, says no problem, why not do that? What are you so afraid of hearing more information from a citizen? So I think that 3 minute rule, there's nothing wrong with having a limit, but when somebody is giving you, Dana always has great information, you should be interested in that information. You should be recording it, writing it down, and she should get answers. And we all should, I want answers to her questions. And I want answers to the last lady's questions on the quarry. Lastly,